Good morning and welcome to 10 Radio's political interviews. These are running through the week. We're going to be talking to each one of the general election candidates at 9 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock every day this week. Yesterday we spoke to Rebecca Powell, Conservative Party. Tomorrow we'll be talking to the UKIP candidate, then Labour, and then on Friday the Green candidate. But today we are joined in the studio by Gideon Amos from the Liberal Democrats. Very warm welcome, Gideon.
Hi, Mark. Thank you.
And you've had some sort of political life before, but this is the first time you've ever stood in a general election, isn't it?
Yeah, I in my 20s, I'm 51 now, in my 20s I was much more involved in that I was a councillor and I was a prospective parliamentary candidate in Oxford East back in the 1990s. But yeah, then I had a series of jobs which actually prevented me from doing anything politically, party politically, and that I left. That culminated with 5 years in civil service, which I finished in 2014, and felt it was time. One of the reasons I left, actually, was I felt it was there were things that I needed to do, and I was concerned about seeing a rather more divided country, and I really wanted to get back involved. So
what's been your motivator for your political life? What's driven you into politics?
For me, I think politics is about how people can fulfill their lives the way they want to, you know, and that might be in terms of how the job they have, it might be in terms of their career, it might not be in terms of work, it might be in terms of how they enjoy their life outside of work. And I think that the best things that politics can do is to enable people and free people to lead their life in a way that they want to, in a fulfilled way. And that's really the most important thing for me. And having seen, you know, like all of us, we have a whole range of experiences of life and friends and relatives. I think seeing how people can achieve the life they want to lead is really the key thing for me.
Okay, and you're a local person by birth, is that right?
No, I grew up in Wales, in Somerset, over the levels. I wasn't born in Somerset, but I grew up there for about 10 years. My mother's family is Somerset, going back several generations. Then after Wales, moved away, studying, so forth, working, and I met my wife Caroline, who grew up in Taunton. So always coming back down to Taunton, back down to Somerset all those years, and ultimately about 8 years ago moved back home, if you like, to Somerset, into Taunton, and great for the kids to have their grandparents around the corner and all that sort of thing.
You've got a couple of kids? Or?
We've got four children. Yeah, number of them are a bit older, so you know, off doing other things, but my youngest, Felix, is 12, so yeah, we've got quite a busy household.
As it should be.
Yeah,
as it
indeed.
Should be. And your name, Gideon Amos, that's about as West Country as you get, isn't it?
Yeah, well, Amos is you know, one of these sort of low church Presbyterian Bible names, yeah, there's a lot of low church around here, and we all know that. Yeah, my parents took the first name, thought it would be my dad always said, oh, we thought it might be useful if you had an unusual name. I'm not sure he expected me to be standing for Parliament, but there you are.
He was thinking ahead. It reminds me of a Thomas Hardy name.
Yeah,
you've not been seducing any milkmen.
That's probably one way to get on the front page of the Gazette, but I haven't gone that far yet.
Yeah, if you're elected, you have the chance. And in terms of your professional background,
I qualified as an architect. That was my first training, and then I worked in a big company for a while, and actually a small architects firm initially, and then a big company, and then I got the opportunity to run a kind of advice. It was a bit like a law centre in London, but it was specialised in sort of development planning type issues and cases, and I gradually moved into planning and sort of more sustainable development stuff, and that's where my career's been, really.
Okay, and we're going to come on to talk about, because it's one of the critical things at the moment, housing policy in this country and the situation with housing. But just in terms of your understanding of the way of the world, what is it, do you think, that makes a good, strong community?
I think it's things like 10 Radio, actually. I think it's things, it's the community organisations, it's the things that people do for the love of it, not because they have to put the bread on the table every day. I think it's I'm constantly inspired by going around parts of Taunton Deane, Wellington, Wiverliscombe, and seeing all the kind of community groups, the voluntary groups. Some are through churches, many are not, and that is so enriching, and you know, and just really encouraging and positive thing, and makes you go home and you after that going to such an organisation, you go home and you feel, you know, this is great, you know, this is what a community is all about, actually. And without those things happening, we would be much poorer communities, wouldn't we? So.
And the campaigning, how are you finding that?
Campaigning is going really well. I've tightened at least two notches on my belt, so I must be rushing around quite a lot. We're busy with the posters, as some of your listeners may have seen, so we keep running out, having to make more. Even have my volunteer up on Sunday evening, rushing into the workshop to make some more posters, so that's going really well. We're getting a great response on the doorstep. People are coming over to the Liberal Democrats, to my candidacy. They see that we are the one alternative here in Taunton Deane to the Conservatives, and they want to see the country change for the better. So it's a really, I'm having a really positive campaign, and people are coming over.
What's a typical day like when you're campaigning?
A typical day for me is make sure I sleep and eat properly. That's absolutely number one. Everyone told me that, and it's cool. It is absolutely correct. So yeah, proper breakfast. We have hens running around our garden, so there's always good eggs for breakfast. And then maybe campaign team meeting first thing, and then I'm getting out as quickly as I can over to tend to go to some of the further flung parts of the constituency in the morning. I was over in Ashbrittle the other morning. My sister came down to help me knock on doors, and we went to see the 3,000-year-old yew tree, which was fantastic. And then in the afternoon, you know, perhaps some more populous areas. And talking to as many people as I can, and then, you know, evening to evening there might be a hustings or a community meeting to attend.
What sort of concerns are people raising on the doorstep with you?
I think people are worried about the, I think there's been a lot of upset and change over the last couple of years. We've seen a lot of results, whether you're thinking back to the referendum or, you know, Donald Trump or all sorts of things happening. People feel that that things have been lurching in fairly extreme directions. And I think a lot of people would like to see it. A lot of people sort of sigh at me and say, oh, not another election. Why are we having this election? And of course, you know, part of our argument is that they don't actually need an election. They've already got a majority in the House of Commons. But you know, people are looking at it in terms of, well, how could we not have a little bit of balance back? In terms of particular issues, I think, as always, people are concerned about their job, their children's future, their education. Schools cuts are very high on people's agenda because there's one thing that affects almost every family in the whole constituency. They know their local school is having its money cut, and whatever the reasons, you know, that's a worry in terms of what that effect that's going to have on their children.
Okay, and yeah, we'll come back to talk in more detail about some of those different policy areas as we go through your manifesto. But just in terms of overall, and it's a question that I often ask myself, and it's a fairly fundamental question. I should have the answer to by now, because I'm 53 as well. But what is a Liberal Democrat? What does it mean? What's the philosophy?
Well, that's I'm glad we got an hour, Mark. that's a great question. I mean, you know, right here in Somerset, we had the tradition of liberalism. It goes back many, many years. John Locke in the 17th century was the first with the audacity to say that actually those who rule us need to be subject to the same laws and the same democracy that we ourselves are subject to. And I think it is a a belief in the individual and the individual freedoms protected by law, and that's been the foundation of democracies and liberal democracies across the world, following the liberal wave of liberalism in the 18th and 19th centuries. So it's about that freedom to live your life the way I described earlier. It's also about balance. Liberals believe in concepts of balance and the idea of natural order of things, and that goes back also hundreds of years, and it's also one of the reasons I think we've always had quite strong interest in environmental policy as well, because I think natural order is something in liberalism that goes back a very long
way.
When
you say natural order, you mean holding to the natural environment? Or
I think the importance of the natural environment and the importance, you know, and today we understand it more now, don't we, than they did in the past, but in terms of ecosystems where, you know, we see how so many species are interdependent of each other, on each other, and how our as humans, our impacts on the natural environment affect that and change that. And I think that's absolutely crucial as we consider the future and of course climate change and so mm-hmm. forth.
Okay, well, thank you. And moving on to kind of the national political, well, even the international political landscape, but nationally, if you look at the poll, you have to qualify every time you mention polls now, because we've learned from recent years that they're not a great indicator of how things go. But what we are seeing at the moment is there's a certain amount of volatility in the polls.
Yeah.
The Conservative support seems to be on a downward slope. Jeremy Corbyn seems to be driving support for the Labour Party upward. Liberal Democrats seem to be fairly steady and not moving up or down, but holding ground. What? Why is that? Why are things perhaps not moving in your direction nationally as much as it?
Well, there's been a small uptick in the polls over the last few days. I think, you know, a number of polls now have us not any longer on 6-7%, but sort of 11-12%. So, you know, it's a bit of an uptick. I would usually what happens, we shall have to see, is that as the general election campaigns gather pace, third parties are given a little bit more publicity and exposure than they get the rest of the year, and therefore the poll rating generally increases somewhat for the third party during the campaign. So obviously we're hopeful that I'm hoping. I think Tim Farron will give great performances in the last week or so with all the TV appearances coming up. So we'll see on that front. I think. We live in a system and in a democracy that our constitution mitigates against a third party coming through. It is a two-party system. The whole voting system is predicated on, and it gives an advantage to the first past the post party, and that mitigates towards a two-party system. And we've seen how hard it is for a third party to break through. You know, I remember the SDP. There have been a number of times in the past where third parties made some progress, but then fallen back. Look, we're growing again. Our membership is the highest it's been for 20-30 years. We're winning council seats all over the country. Up in the Black Down Hills, we won with a staggering 72% of the vote, a council seat that had always been Conservative since it was created. People are enthused about a more liberal, balanced approach to our country and about the kinds of things we stand for, be that environmental policy, be that sort of restraining the extremes of the Conservatives, which I think my colleagues did in coalition. So I think people want to see a bit of that balance back, and we're getting an upsurge. Whether it's how much that will translate into seats in the general election, we'll have to see. I'm very optimistic we can win here. We had a vote of over 30% in the local elections a couple of weeks ago. We only need a 5% swing to win this seat, and it's really important that people understand how close the Liberal Democrats are to winning this seat, and that, you know, in areas, I have to say, in parts of Taunton, where if people voted Labour and Green, they woke up the next day with still a Somerset County Council controlled by the Conservatives. You know, non-Conservatives need to recognise that in this two-party system we have here in Taunton Deane, it is the Liberal Democrats who offer the change, and we really want people to unite behind me and behind the Liberal Democrats, and we can win this seat.
Well, coming back to that point about Liberal Democrats in Taunton Deane offering change and the coalition government, a lot of people did vote for a Liberal Democrat MP nationally in 2010. They voted on the basis of some fairly idealistic campaigning, some very differentiated campaigning, particularly with regard to things like student loans and so forth. And what they got, or what people on the street tell us, is that what they feel is that they got more of the same. They voted not to have a Tory candidate in MP in Taunton Deane. They ended up with a government that supported Tory government and Tory policies. Yeah. Isn't that regrettable?
Let me preface my answer by being absolutely open, and this is not about Liberal Democrats necessarily so much as about me. I've been very open right from the beginning of this campaign that I would not join or be part of any coalition with the Conservatives in if I become your MP in the next Parliament. So I'm absolutely clear I want to be a good constituency MP. I've had a career. I'm not trying to climb the greasy pole of ministerial office. It's just not my thing. I want to be able and free to stand up in the House of Commons and defend our local schools, our armed services and the Marines base being closed, things like that that I really care about. So that's my position, Mark. But to answer your question directly, we believe, I explained that we believe in balance, we believe in a more progressive kind of politics. And throughout Europe, that has meant parties being willing to say they will put their differences to one side, and when the country needs it, they will work together. And and of course there were mistakes in coalition, and I'm not denying that. Happy to talk about one or two of those, but at the end, in the final analysis, I think history will be a little kinder to Nick Clegg and the Lib Dem, what the Lib Dems did in 2010. It's easy to forget in 2010, major banking institutions across the world were crashing and going out of business. There was an international economic crisis. The markets were panicking because we didn't appear to have a government in the United Kingdom. What the Liberal Democrats did was to work with the party, as they promised to before the general election. They worked with the party that the public gave the biggest vote to, and that was the Conservative Party. The Labour Party didn't have the numbers in the House of Commons. If we collaborated with them, there would not have been a majority or a stable government. So they delivered stable government, and they did a number of good things. They, for example, built on, and I was talking to someone about this the other day, we built on Lloyd George's proud, the great Liberal Prime Minister Lloyd George introduced state old age pensions for the first time in coalition. One thing the Liberal Democrat pension minister did was to secure those pensions and give a guaranteed triple lot, we called it, so that pensions go up every year by a minimum of 2.5%. So a number of really important things were achieved. We also stabilized the economy. Economic growth came back. We took tax away from the lowest paid in this country. We stopped the locking up of children who had no crime except that their parents were asylum seekers. There are a whole range of things that Liberal Democrats did. Were mistakes made? Of course. I understand that. And I accept some people are still angry about that. But with 8% of the members of Parliament, my view is it's pretty incredible how much the Liberal Democrats did achieve. And what we're seeing now is we can see, can't we, how much was held back. We now see the education budget, schools budgets are no longer protected in the way that they were in the coalition. Every school in Taunton Deane is having its budget cut. We're also seeing much more extensive cuts to our armed services. As I mentioned, Norton Manor Marines camp being closed. It's a big campaign for me. I really believe if I become the MP and I carry on working on that, I think we can get that decision reversed and we can keep the Norton camp here in Taunton Deane. And of course, we've had all sorts of other things happening, like Brexit, which I'm sure you want to get on and talk about. So I think you can see what we achieved by looking at the rate of change since the Liberal Democrats left the coalition.
Okay, and a couple of questions from local people that would be good to slot in before we get on to Brexit. But We'll just give you a chance to have a drink of water, because I've been making you do a lot of talking there, Gideon. So we'll allow you time to do that. But a couple of short ones for you.
Sure.
First one is from Johnny Doe, and it's one that's being addressed to all the candidates. What evidence is there that your leader, Tim Farron, is a strong and stable one?
I think Tim is a really excellent character. He is completely genuine. You only need to watch him for 5 seconds, and you know what you see is exactly what you get. He is passionate. He is the only leader who actually comes from a working class background. It makes the diversity of our party and its makeup absolutely obvious. And he's passionate. He believes in a stronger Britain, in a tolerant Britain, one that believes in its liberal values. And I think that's something that, you know, I can be proud of, and I think we can all be proud of.
And a question from Eddie in Wiveliscombe. Are there any policies in the other manifestos of the other parties that you particularly like?
I have to confess, I'm completely stumped by this question. I could say the ones that, you know, that they agree with on the Lib Dem manifesto, but in terms of what do I like about other parties' policies, I think we need to go. I'll say the Green Party's a general approach to the environment. I think we need a much stronger environmental protection in this country. I think that we just, some of the things that happened recently, the ending of the zero carbon home. There was a program for all new homes to become zero carbon, and that's gone. The carbon capture program at power stations, that's been cancelled. The support for wind energy, that's been cancelled. All these things are going in the wrong direction. I do want to see a much greener agenda.
Okay, we'll move on to Brexit now. I'll just ask you one question, then we're going to play a bit of music to give us all a break. So on Brexit, clearly, in terms of the three main parties, the big difference between you and the others is that you've explicitly stated that you want another referendum on the final deal being put before the British people before we actually exit the EU.
Yeah.
Why is that important?
Because the one thing nobody got in the referendum was to see a plan of how Britain would arrange its affairs after leaving the EU. No such plan was produced or published. What we will have now is 2 years where the Prime Minister here and the European leaders will negotiate in secret a deal which will set the future of this country perhaps forever. We are simply saying that it's right that people should not only see that deal but also have the opportunity to vote on it, and yes, have the opportunity to remain. But I will say one short thing more, which I think is actually even more important on the Brexit thing, which is that whatever happens with Brexit and whatever shape Brexit takes, we need a strong MP who is going to make sure that people in Wiveliscombe, people in Taunton, people in Wellington do not suffer in terms of their jobs, in terms of prices in the shops. What we need is a tough MP who will stand up when the government, if the government get things wrong on Brexit, and defend those things. And that's the most important thing to me, I believe.
We'll have a bit of music now, and we'll talk more Brexit in a minute.
Just hold my hand while I come to a decision I've
Well, welcome back to the interview with Gideon Amos, Liberal Democrat candidate for the general election. And we're talking about Brexit at the moment. From my point of view, Brexit's become an incredibly, or always has been, but since the election, it's not healed. It's an incredibly divisive issue. People are incredibly polarised on it and very entrenched in their positions. Mm. And those who believe we should have stayed in the EU don't find much comfort from what they're saying in the Labour or the Conservative policies around it. And those who believe we should leave find the positions of the Lib Dems, in the words of Justin from Wellington, patronising. How can we heal those divisions?
Well, I mean, thanks for asking that question that way, because that's, I think, exactly what we have to do. And perhaps all of us politicians have, all the candidates have a duty to think about, well, how can we bring the country back together? I think that's incredibly important. I would say that one way to do that would be to mitigate the impact of Brexit. I don't think we need to go for the more sort of extreme language we sometimes hear from Nigel Farage and Theresa May in terms of, you know, crashing out with no deal and talking about the other 27 countries of Europe as though they're all our enemies. You know, we really need to move on a little bit from that. We don't believe you need to leave the single market and the customs union as well. And it's really vital because we have 11 billion pounds worth of our exports, 48% of our trade is with Europe. So it's absolutely essential to jobs here in Taunton Deane that we keep that trade going. I think that healing that, as I say, healing that divide will depend largely on whether we can show that we're trying to address the concerns of the 48% who didn't support this Brexit project, as well as delivering policy, whatever the right outcome in a way that's going to work for the UK, and that's a difficult balance. I do have people voting for me who voted leave in the referendum. A number of them are saying, look, you're right, we need to see this deal, we need to see what it looks like. If it's not the deal we thought we were voting for when we voted leave, then maybe I don't want leave if it's not giving all the advantages and benefits, which is why we're saying, look, in a democracy is about checks and balances. So you've really got a choice in this election. Either you can say, okay, it's all fine, we're going to leave it to Boris Johnson, Theresa May and Nigel Farage and give them a blank check, and this is your last vote and your last ever say on what happens in the future. You give them that, they get their vote, they get their majority in the House of Commons, which already looks like it'd be pretty overwhelming, and they steam off and however they want to handle these negotiations in quite antagonistic way, as I can see, then that's what we get. Or you can say, well, actually, in our country, we believe not just in a one-party state, we believe in a few checks and balances, and yeah, let the people have a look at that deal in 2 years. And if it's a great deal, if Brexit's working, then everyone's going to vote for it. So I can't imagine why leavers would object to that.
What would a great deal look like? What will you be looking for when, for example, the repeal bill needs to be voted on? Or similar steps in the process.
Yeah, I mean, I think the repeal bill is an important one. We need to make sure that is not being used as a cover to sort of unpick all sorts of environmental legislation. For example, support for farming has only been guaranteed till 2022. So what happens after that is anybody's guess. In terms of environmental regulation, we must be absolutely vigilant in the House of Commons, and I would be, that the kind of reversals of environmental protection I mentioned that's happened since in the last 2 years the Conservative government don't happen again in the Great Repeal Bill. What would a good Brexit look like? It would be one that keeps those opportunities for our children, our young people, to study abroad, to travel, to learn about other cultures, to have the opportunity to work and that freedom in Europe. It would be keeping free trade. I mean, Liberals have worked and campaigned for free trade for centuries. I mean, it is extraordinary now that it is only the Liberal candidate in this election that is arguing for free trade to be kept with Europe. And we can look back at history and we can say, well, when did we try other things and how did that work? And you look at when other things were tried, more protection, drawing up the drawbridge around our economy and protecting it with tariffs has always led to prices going up in the shops. Petrol's gone up by 5p a litre already. average grocery bill's gone up by £21 a week in the last 3 months. These things are could begin to affect us. This is why it's absolutely vital, whatever you think about Brexit, whichever way you voted on Brexit, we need an MP who's going to stand up for trade, jobs and keeping prices low in our shops here in Taunton Deane. And that, I think, is actually more important than trying to re-debate the whole Brexit question.
Moving on to another area in your manifesto, and housing, which is an area that you know something about. Mm. Undeniably, we've seen an increase in homelessness on the streets. We've seen a rise in housing costs, a decrease in homes being built, an increase in proportion of private rented housing, as opposed to self-owned or social housing, and rents as a proportion of people's weekly income going through the roof.
Yeah.
Another comment from Justin Wellington is that he thinks that housing costs are one of the biggest problems facing working people at the moment. Mm. Do you agree, and what can be done about it?
I do agree with that. I think housing is a hugely challenging issue for so many young people, finding it difficult to, much harder than previous generations, to get on the housing ladder. There are a whole range of things we need to do. I think that where we need to change current approaches is that we have councils and government, of course, everything, every level of government, council is controlled by Conservatives, has been for a number of years. Their approach has been, well, where we need housing, we wait for the developers to come forward and apply for housing, and that's how we deliver our housing in this country. Now, that was never going to work for communities or for affordable housing. We need a much more diverse supply of housing. We need more smaller house builders who are using those little infill sites, those small community, you know, your local community builders who are able to build houses rather than relying on the big volume house builders. We need more council housing. Councils should be building housing. We need more housing associations building housing, so we are not beholden just to three or four big developers. What that means currently is that those big developers control the supply of housing into the market. So even if you have a big site with, say, a few thousand houses being built, they will only release 100 or so, or a few more than that, into the market each year so that the price doesn't come down. Now, what our young people desperately need is those prices to come down, so that we need a much greater diversity of supply. In terms of people renting, we have in our manifesto a policy called rent to buy, and that would enable people renting where the landlord agrees to give, it would give those people renting the first refusal to buy that property, and would enable them to turn the rent they paid into down payments on purchasing the property. So that would help people who are renting at the moment to get on the property ladder.
What about things like self-build, relaxing the regulations a little bit to facilitate people doing that?
Yeah, I think self-build, again, it would be part of that diversity of supply. So, you know, small builders, housing associations, councils, self-builders, you know, I think many people know in places like France, for example, it's much more common to get a plot of land and to self-build your own place. I mean, of course, we don't have quite the same land supply here in Britain. We're much, much denser and in terms of our land use, at least in some areas. I think the planning system has become increasingly complex, and you know, I should know because I've worked in it, but it has become incredibly complex, and that makes a real barrier to entry for small builders, for someone who wants to build their own home. And absolutely, we need to simplify all those regulations. It's not about rolling them back or abolishing important controls, but it's about how can we make the system much more user-friendly to a small builder, because really that makes it the preserve of these big boys again, and I don't think that's what anybody wants.
In terms of education, schools locally, as you've mentioned before, are suffering from real terms reductions in funding. It's been a huge issue here in Wiveliscombe, both for the primary school and for the secondary school, but much further afield as well. How do you go about addressing the issues of maintaining the quality of service within our schools?
Yeah, well, here we are at Kingsmead, and they're expecting. They've been having to cut their budget by £173,000 just this particular school right here, which works out at £211 per pupil, and that's equivalent to about five teachers. So whether Kingsmead has to lose five teachers or whether it can make those savings in other ways is a huge challenge. And if you think every school in the constituency is facing that, that's massively detrimental both to teachers who and their morale and the work they try and do every day teaching kids. It's also detrimental to kids themselves in terms of the education they receive. Look, what would we do about it? Our manifesto is absolutely clear. We have produced a costed manifesto, I'm really pleased to say. The Institute of Fiscal Studies independently has looked at the three big parties' manifestos. Labour and Conservatives, it says, do not add up, or it says they do not present honest choices. Liberal Democrats generally get a clean bill of health. Within that, schools, we're saying £56 million for Somerset schools. That would address these schools cuts we're seeing locally. And we also, as part of that, we would make sure that we meet the inflationary increases. So what the schools are experiencing are, as salaries go up, only 1%, but that nonetheless, that's quite a big bill. Fuel bills go up, other bills go up. That inflation is not being met by the government, and that's why they're having these cuts. So we would meet the real terms inflation increase at each school, so they would be safe on that front. We'd also lift the 1% cap as maximum pay increase for people working in the public services. I'm not sure why they are singled out for having such a strict limit on what their pay increase can be. We don't agree with that, and we would release it. And so these things, as I say, funded in a costed manifesto where we've been very careful about our spending commitments and has generally got a clean bill of health from the Institute of Fiscal Studies, unlike the Conservative Party.
And a similar issue exists within the health service at the moment. People are concerned about the resources going into health, about long waiting lists, about the cost of care, about what people perceive as the encroachment of privatisation into the National Health Service. Now, you're looking again to scrap the 1% pay cap for health nurses and health staff. You're going to put £7 billion into the health service. Is that going to be enough to actually turn things around on such a big issues?
Well, lots of people are really worried about this, and in particular about what's been called Theresa May's dementia tax, because it means a huge extra bill for people who are going to have to face long-term care, are going to have to use up the value of their house. So Conservatives haven't been clear what the cap will be on that, so we're still waiting, and a lot of people will lose up to 40% of the value of their home will go in care bills, which to us is unfair and punitive on older people. Look, what do we do about the NHS and social care? We need to have an integrated solution. Is our one penny on the rate of income tax to fund that £6-7 billion additional money into the NHS, is that enough? Well, it's a lot more it's a lot more guaranteed than either of the other two main parties. The chief exec of the National Health Service has said they need £10 billion. We're looking at £6-7 billion. More can be put in. It's not just about the money. I actually firmly believe the money is important and is needed, because we have many more older people as a proportion of the population than we used to have, and that's the biggest reason, single reason, why the demands on the health service are growing. So it is about funding, but there are other things as well. It's about how we use that funding. We believe mental health has been a Cinderella service. Norman Lamb, I think, you know, has been fantastic. He's won plaudits from across the parties as a former health minister who actually put mental health on the agenda, and we've carried that through into Liberal Democrat policy and into our manifesto. We would ring fence £500 million of that money to continue that crusade to give mental health support the priority that it really needs. And then finally, we would introduce a cross-party commission. You know, we recognise that politicians in one party don't have all the answers. The National Health Service really is too important to the whole country to be the preserve of party politicking. And Norman Lamb, again, as our health spokesman, has put this policy in our manifesto of a cross-party commission on the future of the National Health Service and our broken care system.
Mental health is an issue that is raising in profile. We had Prince Harry famously a few weeks ago making his statement about the issues he faced dealing with his mother's death. But it's something that people are increasingly noticing the gap between provision and people's need.
Yeah.
Barry from Wiveliscombe also asked a question about the Rethink Mental Illness Initiative, which asks for three things. One, fair access to mental health services and support. A mental health act that's fit for tomorrow. Improving the employment gap for people suffering mental health issues. And the fourth thing, and the place to call home for everyone with severe mental health, because it does drive people onto the streets.
Yeah.
Is that an initiative that I think those, Democrats support?
Yeah, I mean, I think those are all four, you know, was it Barry? I think that those are all really four really important principles, and I support them. The Change in Mental Health Act, I completely agree with that. It's an outdated, sort of almost coercive piece of legislation, and then it needs to be looked at again. I think the link to homelessness is key, and until now we've had a policy where you know, and you mentioned rough sleeping earlier, where people who don't meet the requirements are not given a place in accommodation, and you get both rough sleeping and a coincidence with people with mental health problems. What we have put in our manifesto is what's called a housing first policy, and this has worked in mainland Europe countries, and there are pilots going on at the moment in the UK, and it seems to work. It's very simple. It's saying, look, if someone is rough sleeping and you know, that kind of problem area in their life, maybe they have mental health problems, get them a decent bed and a shelter first. And if you do that, then it's a lot easier to address the other problems that they have. So that would be our part of our policy. And we've been very bold and said we want to end rough sleeping completely. And partly through the Housing First measure, partly through other initiatives about helping to get people into work. And also getting rid of some of the rather more punitive measures that are affecting people on benefits. When they try and get work, they're finding the work allowances taken away, so we would restore those. But I think, as Barry said, those are really important initiatives, and I would support them all.
On transport, you're committed in your manifesto to moving ahead with HS2 and HS3 and Crossrail, so the big infrastructural initiatives. None of those seem to really do much for the South West or this corner of the South West.
I think that's a fair point. I think that fundamentally, high-speed rail transport is the lowest carbon, lowest form of carbon emission per passenger mile travelled. So if we care about our environment, we want the most environmentally efficient form of transport, it is high-speed rail. But yes, we do need that down in the southwest. It's a travesty that the electrification of the Great Western Line has basically been cancelled because of the government messing up the funding for Network Rail, and that's basically on hold and not happening. We need to see the same kind of attention paid to links down to the southwest and across the southwest as we see to north-south transport. And again, the southwest is becoming a poor relation compared to the all the attention given to the northern powerhouse and the north-south links.
Just thinking about how, you know, things like pensions and benefits, you're going to hold on to the triple lock in your manifesto, which is something that people are very concerned about. Mary, I think from Wellington, raises a point about carer's allowance, a specific point. She's a pensionable age. She's had to give up a business that she was using to supplement her pensions to care for her husband. Mm-hmm. As she's a pensionable age, she's not entitled to carer's allowance. So though she's doing the right thing, taking responsibility, providing the care, she's not getting the state support she feels she needs. And that's not a unique story with many people who provide care or who are in need of care, losing out or being driven into poverty or near poverty. Mm-hmm. What reassurance can you give that someone like Mary and people, many people who are in a similar situation, that you can make a difference for anyone who's paid all their taxes all their life and now has to rely on the state support them in a time of crisis?
Well, I think Mary's position is really important, and carers are the sort of unsung heroes of our... You asked me earlier right at the beginning what makes a community, and I said voluntary organisations, but actually, you know, thinking about what Mary's just said, it's there are an awful lot of people out there who are sometimes in a bit of a lonely way looking after a relative or someone close to them. And that can be, I know that can be a very challenging place to be, and challenging emotionally, physically, and so forth. I've just looked up to check our manifesto. We do have things, and I believed that we had things to support carers, and I'm glad, and we do. We would raise the amount that people are allowed to earn before losing the carer's allowance. We'd raise that from £110. We give the NHS a legal duty to identify carers and give them a carer's passport, and we would we'd make sure they had rights, including visiting rights and so forth, within the NHS. I think that, you know, all I can say is I think the work that Mary is doing and other carers do across the country are yes, it's economically valuable to the economy, but it's all because it's fulfilling a greatly needed service, which will cost an awful lot of money for the state or the community to provide. But actually, it's more important than that, isn't it? It's a loving, caring community at work and in evidence. And you know, absolute plaudits to Mary and all the people out there who care for other people.
And people who are in need of support due to disability, the current initiative is to move away from disability living allowance and similar benefits to a personal independence payment. Mm-hmm. And within that, people are subjected to a work capability assessment.
Yes,
and that's
right.
Become quite a controversial thing. People find it very intrusive. Sometimes
yes.
It gets the wrong outcomes.
Yeah.
And it causes great difficulties for many people who aren't really able to help themselves. Your manifesto commits to scrapping the work capability assessment, but what are you going to replace it with?
What we believe in is a system which is much more related to local availability of opportunities. So the work capability assessments assesses someone, as you say, in a very rather a cold way, and it says that that person may be able to carry out a job of some description, and it has absolutely no relationship to whether that job is available in the town or in the neighborhood where that person lives. It's a nonsense. What we need, if we're going to have an assessment of people, we need to look at what the opportunities are that for them to work, rather than demanding that they work at something for which there's no opportunity.
Moving on to law and order, clearly people are concerned about the safety of us as a population when we go about our normal practices, in light of things like the events in Manchester. You plan to scrap the Prevent scheme, which was the scheme that was introduced to combat radicalisation, particularly among young people in the Islamic community. But given the impact of radicalisation on young people, isn't that risky? I mean, what we've seen, isn't that a risky thing to be doing now?
What we're actually saying, Mark, in the manifesto is replace the Prevent scheme with a scheme that will work better. I think what we've found, what's been shown, is the Prevent scheme isn't delivering and it isn't identifying people. We're sceptical about the advantages of blanket surveillance of everyone and everything and everybody's email and everybody's browsing history. What we need to do, and former Deputy Assistant Commissioner Brian Paddock, who is our spokesperson on policing and security matters, has been absolutely clear. What we need is a more targeted approach, and that's what we would invest the money in instead. So what we're saying is We need to do targeted, more targeted surveillance, more surveillance of these people who are actually likely to be carrying out attacks. Of course, it's incredibly difficult to identify them. We know that, but we don't think blanket spreading of our resources is wise. I've actually been talking to quite a few people who are retired police officers, retired from the armed services. There are quite a lot of folk in that position here in Taunton Deane. And as well as the sort of funding of those kind of programs, the other thing that they're actually very concerned about and strikes a chord with me is that the way government ministers seem happy now to talk down to such people and to denigrate them and to suggest that they are not working hard enough or they have too generous conditions and in ways that they're not able to speak back about. So I just want to say how important it is, I think, to respect people, to respect the whole idea of public service in this country. I know that's an unfashionable thing nowadays, but you know, maybe I grew up in an old-fashioned household, but my father fought in the Second World War, and then he and my mum happened to work in public services for nearly all the time after that. I think that the pride and importance of people who work as public servants needs to be recognised again, and that's partly about funding, and we put an extra $300 million into police officers, and it's a scandal we've lost those police officers, but it's also about a bit more than that. It's about the kind of attitude we get from government ministers and politicians toward people in public services, and I just, Mark, wanted to say something about that because I think it's really important.
And just in terms of summing up, because we've got to few more minutes left and then we're going to play a bit of music to close off the program, but looking at the situation at the moment and the polls, is a Progressive Alliance really the only way forward?
I'm open to, you know, arrangements with other parties. We've stuck our neck out in the past and gone into coalition, so I don't think anyone can accuse Liberal Democrats of not doing that.
But you said this time that you won't go into coalition.
That's right. I think that we think that there are other forms of cooperation that I would be willing to. I mean, in the Commons, I think it would be a matter of what they call confidence and supply. I think if there was a need to stabilise government, then there are ways of doing that. Confidence and supply means that the third party would support the other party when it comes to votes of confidence and in terms of setting a budget for the country each year. So that's confidence and supply of money. I think that would be a better approach. We're coming up in the polls. We're winning more votes and more seats in councils. We haven't done as well as we would have liked because the Conservatives are benefiting from the implosion of UKIP. So we're both going up. Conservatives are going up. We're going up, and we're kind of chasing each other's tail. As someone said at the local elections, it was a night of mixed fortunes for UKIP. They lost every single council seat but gained overall control of the Conservative Party. So that's something that we're having to deal with. But as I say, we are going up. I do believe in cooperation with other parties. I made absolutely clear at a public meeting in Taunton a couple of months ago that I am open to arrangements and suggestions about how we can work with other parties here locally, and indeed I actually asked a senior member of the Liberal Democrats before the polls closed to make before the nominations closed, excuse me, for the Member of Parliament election, to make contact with both the Taunton Green Party and the Labour Party to explore whether there any arrangements were possible or agreements possible across parties, and we were told no.
And on that note, Gideon Amos, thank you very much for joining us at Ten Radio. As I said before, we'll be having one-hour interviews with each of the candidates in the general election for the Taunton Deane constituency this week at 9 o'clock. So we've already had the Conservative interview, just had the Liberal Democrat interview. We'll be having interviews with UKIP, Greens and Labour in the next 3 days. And those will be made available on the 10 Radio website on www.10radio.org. But for now, we'll leave you with a piece of music, and thank you very much to Gideon Amos.
Thank you.